Sa, he, tam, you, viratspa, perform, tam, good fortune, umam, O great Lord, amasa, by the darkness, lupta, have been suspended, paramanam, of prescribed duties, adabra, magnanimous, without reservation. Dayaya, mercy. Christia, by your glance. Apanam, us. We surrender. Ahasi, are able. Ikshitam, to see. Translation by Srila Prabhupada. The demigods pray to Brahma. Please look upon us mercifully. But we have fallen into a miserable condition because of the darkness. All our work has been suspended. Please repeat. The demigods pray to Brahma.
The demigods pray to Brahma.
Please look upon us mercifully.
Please look upon us mercifully.
But we have fallen into a miserable condition.
We have fallen into a miserable condition.
Because of the darkness.
Because of the darkness.
All our work has been suspended.
All our work has been suspended.
Purple by Srila Prabhupada. Because of complete darkness throughout the universe, the regular activities and engagements of all the different planets were suspended. In the north and south poles of this planet, there are sometimes no divisions of day and night. Similarly, when the sunlight does not approach the different planets within the universe, there is no distinction between day and night. Satvam vidasva sambhumam amasa lupta karmanam The demigods pray to Brahma, please look upon us mercifully, for we have fallen into a miserable condition because of the darkness. All our work has been suspended. Sri Chaitanya Manom Vistam Chapitam Hinam Bhutale Swayam Rupa Gadamayam Gatati Kambatantitam Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Adaya Gadara Shiva Sri Gaura Bhakta Vindam Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama 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 Hare Hare. So this is very nice. Understanding of the position of the demigod. The demigod means not completely God, but very powerful. So we can understand that there are different conditions of godliness in this material world. We see that sometimes we say someone is godly. Sometimes a king also is looked towards as being as powerful as the representative. As in the Bhagavad Gita says, the Supreme Personality of God, it says, of rulers, I am the monarch. So Krishna consciousness is very scientific. It's a very scientific process to understand that the whole business of this material universe is that of the dominated and the dominators. You see, if you study, you'll find that there are dominators and those that are being dominated. And this is very scientific to understand. Just like you look at your own self, that you are being predominated. If you study your own life, you'll find that you are all the time being dominated by certain conditions. You see? Just like this body. What is this body? It is a set of conditions. It is called designation. Just like it is designated. It is a designated condition. Something which has been given by higher authority. You didn't choose. did not choose these conditions. Just like the body is acting and behaving in a certain way. You didn't choose that. Okay? You didn't have a choice. Just like if your nose is dribbling. You see? It's not that you premeditated that now I'll make my nose dribble. Is it? It's not that you're thinking, oh, now I'll do that. No, the body is acting and behaving in a certain way. Sometimes it's very conducive and sometimes very embarrassing. You see? How the body behaves. Just like old age. Old age is an embarrassment. It's an embarrassment. Nobody is saying, oh yes, now I must get old. You know, it's about time I get old. I need to look a bit wrinkled. See? Nobody's actually thinking that I need to become a little more wrinkly and more crinkled. You see? But the body is behaving in that way. And you are being subjected to the conditions. So therefore, we are acting and behaving under certain conditions. And therefore it's called conditional life. Conditional life, that means that when the conditions are disturbed, then there is anxiety. See? Just like your body. When there's too much increase in mucus, then there is so much anxiety. Then you have a cold, you have tuberculosis, you have so many different diseases. Because the body is basically made up of it means mucus, bile, and air. Bile. Kapha, mucus, bile. These are three compositions. And when there is too much increase or decrease in any of these things, when there is imbalance, as soon as the conditions are a little different, just like you can only exist in a certain temperature. When the conditions are too much increase in temperature, you're in anxiety. When there's too much decrease in the temperature, you're in anxiety. You see? Now, if you look at other species, they can withstand tremendous cold. Just like there are penguins, porpoises. They love the cold. They jump into these freezing cold Arctic sea. They don't feel any anxiety. They're not anxious to do that. Rather, if you put them in the Mediterranean or in some tropical environment, they'd be in complete anxiety. See? Complete anxiety. So the point is that the body is relative to certain conditions. And when those conditions are favorable, then there's what we call happiness. And when those conditions are unfavorable, it's what we call distress. You see? So therefore, we are always trying to make adjustments, just like because we are living in a very cold environment. So we're making so many adjustments, just like this house. This house is actually an adjustment. You see, we can't live in the field. Animals can live in the field. They don't feel the same anxiety. You see? If we live in the field, then we become very anxious. Isn't it? Because if there's too much wet, then we become disturbed. And if it's too hot, if you live in a field in India, you see India, when you go to India, Vrindavan, now Vrindavan's about 130 degrees. So you know what 130 degrees does to you if you live in a field? You see, you won't last very long. So the point is that whether you're in too cold or too hot, so intelligent person can understand that we have to make the conditions just right. And then we call that happiness. Isn't it? You see, we call it happiness. Just like we all have certain conditions by which we feel happy. And when those conditions are not favorable, we become distressed. Some people are happy when they're in their own town. Just like you find that people when they're traveling, some people hate to travel because they can't stand being away from their family or their village or their town. So they become distressed, even though they might be traveling in a certain place. Just like I know people, they don't like to travel because they don't like the hostile environment or the alien environment. They like to be with the ones they love or whatever. So if we study on every level of activity, there are certain conditions which are conducive to what we call happiness. But actually all of those, they're simply conditions that are relative to the body. You see? They're simply conditions relative to the body. So therefore we are existing within the plane of relativity. Everything is dependent upon conditions. And that is from the lowest planets to the highest. Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, Abhama Bhuvana Loka, that from the planet of Brahma down to the kingdom of the germs, all are places of misery wherein repeated birth and death take place. All are places of misery wherein repeated birth and death take place. So, whether you are existing on the highest dominion, just like as I was saying, there in the material creation, there is the dominators and those that are dominated. So, even the greatest dominators, the demigods, they also become disturbed when the conditions change. You see? Now, what are those conditions? One of the most predominant conditions of our happiness is light. You see? Just like if I said to you, oh, listen, I want you to go on a great holiday. I want you to go on a great holiday. And you say, well, where is the holiday? And I said, it's in the darkest parts of the Amazon jungle. And it's so dark, you can't even see your own hand. So, if you go to such a place, suppose, I don't know if you've ever been in forests, but when you go in the forest when they're very dark, they're extremely frightening. You notice that? Who's been in the forest when it's been dark? So you can understand it's very frightening, because darkness, what is the nature of darkness? Huh? It brings along anxiety. That is the one quality of darkness. It brings anxiety. Why does it bring anxiety? You ever thought about that? Why does darkness bring anxiety? Because we're not in control. You cannot control darkness. See? You cannot control darkness. Have you ever noticed that? You can't, you're totally helpless. You go out here in a dark moon night at 1 o'clock in the morning, 2 o'clock in the morning, and you try and control anything. You can't even see your own hand, you see? So even if you're a big, big king of a country, big ruler, as soon as you're in darkness, you're helpless. See? You're helpless. Just like if you're driving along at night, I don't know if you've ever had this, but sometimes if the battery drives, if you're driving along at night and the battery fails and your lights start going dimmer, or your alternator or whatever, gradually your lights start going dimmer. I have a practical experience here. As it goes dimmer, your anxiety increases. You see? It's one thing that, you know, just like if a light breaks. But the more your lights fade, the more anxious you become. Especially if you're traveling along at something like 60, 70 miles an hour. And as soon as the light fades, you have to stop. You have to stop. You haven't got a choice. It's not as if you can say, well, I'll carry on for another 10 miles for the next garage. Because as soon as the light fails, your, what do you call it, control of the situation becomes non-important. See? So that means that everyone within this universe is dependent on light. This is what we can learn from this verse. But even the great demigods, even though they might be able to control so many things, they are dependent upon light for their controlling, just like we also depend on light. You see, scientists are very much proud of their observations, but what is the first quality that you need for observation? Light, exactly. Therefore, that ingredient of light is the single most important factor for observation. Now, who gave the light? This is the big question. You see, where does light come from? The sun, exactly. So therefore, the question then comes, who created the sun? And this is the question that bewilders everyone, because the sun is pumping out so much energy in this universe that in one split second, the sun pumps out more energy than we use in the entire duration of this planet. So just in a microsecond. The sun is giving out such enormous energy. You see? Now this energy has wonderful qualities. What is that? It gives light, it gives illumination, it gives heat. Actually, without the sun, the universe is void, isn't it? It becomes void. So this sun is very, very important, because this sun is the eye of God. God has eyes. You've got eyes, and God has eyes. And the two eyes of God is the sun and the moon. You see? So the point is that in Vedic literature, it is explained. Just like by the rising of the sun, all activity becomes activated, isn't it? You notice how the sun rises? As soon as the sun rises, activity begins. And then as the sun gets stronger, the activity increases. And as the sun fades, activity fades. You see? So the sun is very powerful. Surya Narayan. Surya Narayan means that by the movement of the sun in the sky, the living entities are brought into various types of activities. Therefore, these activities we see, they are dependent upon the sun. Now the sun, this material universe, is actually an ocean of darkness. Ajnana is full of darkness. What is the nature of darkness? Darkness means where there is no perception. The senses cannot function in darkness. You see? They can't function properly. So, consciousness is completely opposed to darkness. You see, everybody has a conscious aversion to darkness. Because consciousness is full of light. You see, that's why you always get in these religious concepts, right? God is light. Everyone can identify God as light. You wouldn't like to get to heaven and find out it's pitch dark, would you? Suppose you finally made it to the pearly gates. And then we opened the door, and there it was, pitch dark. You see? So therefore, you can understand that Godhead is the manifestation of light. Actually, this light is coming from the Brahma Jyoti. The Supreme Lord's body is full of unlimited light. And light is energy, just like the sun. It's giving off energy, you see? Energy. So that energy is coming actually from Narayan. You see, it's coming directly from Narayan. And the sun is the reflective power. Just like when you have a mirror. Sometimes if you reflect a light into a room through a mirror, isn't it? You can reflect into a darkness through a mirror. So the sun is the mirror of the Brahma Jyoti. And therefore the sun is manifesting the Brahman energy into the material world. It is the reflection of Brahman. And therefore, because of the sun, all the other planets are dependent upon that. Just like this planet is completely and utterly dependent on the sun. You see? Even though the sun is supposedly 96 million miles away. So how is it that something which is 96 million miles away is so perfectly related to this planet? Doesn't make sense, does it? If it's all by chance, if everything is going on by simply by some whimsical, chanceful thing, then how is it that everything on this planet is dependent on the sun? Without sun, there's no grains, there's no evaporation of water, there's no clouds. Without the sun, therefore, there would be no vitality in the foodstuffs, in the body. There will be no warmth. There will be the planet will be full of ice and darkness. So therefore, if you take away the sun from this universe, therefore you see what you're actually really living in. Okay? If you really want to know what you're living in, just like a house. You see, a house is, if you have a house, and suppose that house is full of darkness and ice, will you go and live there? You see? Suppose I built you a house which is full of darkness and ice, cold, coldness and darkness. So similarly, this material universe is full of inauspiciousness. It is full of darkness. And it is full of adversity. Adversity means that which is inauspicious, that which is adverse to our happiness. You see? So therefore, it is an alien environment for the soul. Consciousness is actually full of light. Therefore it says, Godhead is light. And wherever there is Godhead, there can be no darkness. Darkness cannot exist. Wherever there is God, there can be no darkness. There can be no ignorance. So that is the meaning of Sat-Chit Ananda. Chit means where there is full cognizance, full consciousness. See? Full consciousness. And this material world is Achit. It is unconscious. It is dead matter. Therefore, it is full of, negative qualities. Achit, Asat. You see? So it is full of the opposite qualities to spirit. That means that spirit is full of consciousness and the material creation is full of unconsciousness. Dead, dark, cold matter. You see? Just like a rock. Have you ever tried to love a rock? Have you ever tried to fall in love with a rock? Pretty hard, isn't it? You see? But if you build a house and you make it very nice, conducive, then there is some possibility of liking it. See, people are very attached to the house because they make it, you can make matter conducive to your sense gratification. Therefore, matter is by nature dead, but by manipulation of matter, we can try to make so many adjustments to fulfill the various conditions that we require for our happiness. You understand? So if you take dead rock, and you build a nice house, and then you live inside, you make the house warm, and you live inside it, then the house becomes very important to you. See what I mean? The house is only rock. But when you transform rock so that it will bring you pleasure, then it becomes very important. So therefore in the material world, as long... As long as we are not in the material world, as long as we can make some sense gratification from this inferior substance, then we are very happy. But as soon as the conditions change and our sense gratification is disturbed, then we are full of anxiety. So even a demigod, when their sense gratification was disturbed on account of the appearance of Aranyakashipu and Aranyaksha, immediately they were fit. You see? Their sense gratification was disturbed. Their situation was disturbed. So therefore, what can we learn from this is that from the highest planets to the lowest, all are places of misery, where there is all full of so many disturbances. You see? So many adverse conditions are there. Therefore, as soon as you make one condition to get rid of your misery, another million conditions are created. Just like motor car. People wanted to travel from A to B, so they didn't like going on horse carriage, so they decided to make horseless carriage. So you can see that down the road, how much endeavor, how much anxiety, how much effort goes into creating these cars. You see? And how many people die, how many animals, how many people die at the mercy of these machines. And then what about the pollution of the atmosphere? What about the mass exploitation of nature and the contamination? You see? Massive. All because we wanted to go from A to B at a quicker pace. See? So therefore, we may make one inconvenience, but we create so many other inconveniences. So therefore, Krishna causes means to understand that whatever the conditions, we are not interested in these external conditions. These external conditions of the material world, we need to make some adjustment, but we should be very simple in our adjustments. We don't need to make so many adjustments, you see? But at the same time, we have to make the real adjustment, which is to get out of this material world and to go back to home, back to God. You see? We have to make the real adjustment. The real adjustment is, just like, for instance, if you go into prison and then you write home to your mother, oh, this prison is very nice, I have nice water. You see? Oh, this prison is very nice because I have 100 watt bulbs and next door he's only got a 40 watt bulb. Is it? Is that very wonderful? Your mother says, oh, my son is happy again. He's got new water in this prison. So the point is that we come into this material world. The material world is full of birth, old age, disease, and death. There are so many. I can talk for the next 5 hours about the human species that is going on.
Then our business is not to take shelter within the darkness of our minds. So, therefore, we also need light. So, generally we find that our information is taken from the light. Just like our knowledge is taken from sensory perception by the process of observation. By our sensual perception, therefore we take our knowledge. You see, just like suppose you go to a car and you say, oh, I can fix it. But what is your authority? So you may say, well, hang on a minute. Okay, I can fix it now. Isn't it? Suppose you say that. Suppose you go up to someone's car and you say, I can fix it. And they say, what is your authority? And you say, oh, I can fix it now. Then what is your authority? Someone may say, well, in here, I can fix it. You see? So you may actually close your eyes, but what is in there is only darkness. You see? So who, just like it's the same principle. If you went into a hospital to do open heart surgery, right? And a patient said, what is your authority for doing the open heart surgery? You went, oh, hang on a minute, I can do it. But if you close your eyes, there's only darkness. So therefore, how can you get light from darkness? You understand the point? How can you get light from darkness? How can you get knowledge from somewhere where knowledge does not exist? So therefore, in order to do any kind of mechanical work or any open heart surgery or whatever, you need to hear. You see, the knowledge has to come from sound. The knowledge is coming from sound. And therefore, that knowledge which comes from sound, providing the sound is pure, therefore that knowledge can cut through all darkness. Just like the same thing, that if you go to college, if you go to school, if you go to university, and if you hear from the right source, if you hear from the mechanic, if you hear from the professor of mechanisms, if you hear from the professor of surgery, the chief surgeon, just like in hospital, you find that when you're in hospital, before they perform any operation, a team of experts will come. It's usually about two or three of them. And you'll find that the chief one, the professor, he will be listened to by everyone else. You see? It's actually quite common that any kind of, before any major operation, the professor will come. And everyone will be listening to him. And he will be given the instructions. Oh, do like this, do like that, do like this. And everyone will be discussing it, but he is the authority. Why? Because he has the purest sound. Because he has also heard from another authority. And this is a crude example, but in the same way that in this material world, everything is darkness. Everywhere there is darkness, ajnana timarandasya, and therefore we take shelter of the spiritual master. As Krishna says in the Gita, tadviri paripattena paripashena sevaya, upadekshanti te jnana janina tattva darshana. So one should try to understand the light by approaching someone who has seen the light. It is no good approaching someone who is in darkness. You see? So what is that person who has seen the light? Just like the demigods, they are approaching Lord Brahma because Brahma, as it is said in the beginning of the Bhagavatam, Tene Brahma Hridaya Adhikavaya Mayanti Asurya. That Brahma, by dint of his meditation, when Brahma first was situated within the universe, there was complete darkness throughout the universe. Complete darkness. So Brahma, by dint of his austerities, because Brahma is the firstborn, therefore there was no one to approach. So therefore Brahma, what was the first association that Brahma had with the truth? The first association he had was sound. You see? Through sound vibration, by hearing the words ta and pa, Brahma was able to, by dint of intelligence given by the Lord, was able to perform austerities, tapasya. By dint of those austerities, Brahma Hridaya Adhikavaye, by the actual flute sound of Lord Krishna. So, by the sound of the Lord's flute, because Krishna's flute is not different from Krishna, so by the sound of the Lord's flute, this Gayatri mantra was created. Om bho bho vat svat tat savito varanyam bhagavadvasya dhimi dhanoguru pishwaryaj. So this first sound, sound vibration, was impregnated from within the heart of Brahma. Although it entered through the, Brahma's ears, it entered into the heart of Brahma, and from within the heart of Brahma, Hridaya Adhikavaye. So from that hearing, by Lord Brahma hearing that original sound, then all of the Vedic knowledge became revealed from within the heart. So therefore, Lord Brahma, although situated in complete darkness, is actually able to create. And the beginning of creation of Lord Brahma, of course we can understand even from a scientific point of view, that the sun is the king of all planets. He is the Lokaraj, he is the king of all planets. And therefore from Lord Brahma was created the sun. From the sun, actually the sun is considered the Surya Narayan. Surya Narayan means that the sun is actually a representation, it is the incarnation of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And therefore from the sun, knowledge is distributed throughout the universe, relative knowledge. So therefore, this illumination of the universe comes from the sun planet. And where there is absence of the sun, then there is very inauspicious. And that's why we see that at nighttime, everything becomes very inauspicious. Nighttime is the time when Lord Shiva comes with all his hobgoblins, with all the ghosts, with all the inhospitable, hostile characters. They all travel at nighttime. And that's why you find also within the universe, especially we can see on this planet, at nighttime everything becomes inauspicious. If you go out, you find that people, the tendency for drinking increases, the tendency for smoking increases, the tendency for illicit sex life increases, the tendency for gambling increases. You find very few people who wake up at 4:30 in the morning and want to go out and have gambling, intoxication, isn't it? It's very rare, you see. If you wake up at 4:30 in the morning, it's not an inclination that you want to go down the discotheque or the club, or you want to go and chase after some illicit sex. So the point is that as soon as there is absence of light, then all the inauspiciousness comes. So the sun is the reflection of the Brahma Jyoti. Just as, to give you an example, suppose that you reflect light within darkness. For instance, if you reflected light into a room by using a mirror. So by using the mirror, you're reflecting the light within the darkness of the room. But at the same time, the mirror is not the source of the light. You understand? What is actually the source of the light is the sun. So in the same way, the sun planet is not the real source of the light. The sun planet is a reflection of the Brahma Jyoti. And therefore, the Brahma Jyoti is the real source of all light within this universe. You see? So everything is resting on Brahman. And through Brahman, through the Brahma Jyoti, this is described in the Srimad Bhagavatam, therefore the light is reflected within this universe through the sun. So in each universe there is a sun, and each universe has one sun, which is contrary to public opinion. But the fact is that each universe, there is one sun and one moon. So the sun is reflecting the Brahma Jyoti, and the moon is reflecting the sun. So therefore, the material world, it is a reflective, just like Prabhupada used the example, that when there is a tree on the bank of a river, when the tree is reflected in the water, the tree is the perverted reflection. So it is perverted on the water. So similarly, the material world is the reflection of the spiritual world, but it is reflected within darkness. You see? The spiritual world is absolute light, and the material creation is practically absolute darkness. So therefore, in order to, if you like, create within the material world, the manifestation of the material nature is manifested in darkness. Therefore, Krishna says, "Abrahma bhuvana loka," that from the highest planets to the lowest, all are places of misery wherein repeated birth and death take place. So you'll find that the natural inclination of consciousness is to move towards light. Just like if you find that if you want to go on a holiday, you go to somewhere where there's, generally speaking, where there is illumination. No one would book into a dungeon. You see? Who would book into a dungeon for a two-week holiday? You see? So why don't we want to book into a dungeon? But actually we see the Vaishnava Acharyas, they did actually live in dungeons. Just like if you go to Jagannath Puri, you'll find that the Vaishnavas actually, they used to live in underneath the ground. You see? So for a Vaishnava, there is no dependency upon darkness and light, because they are not situated on the external plane. They have no business with this material world. Their only business is their internal dealings with Krishna. But generally speaking, we find that everybody is attracted. We are attracted to go to a place where there is plenty of light, because where there is light, there is variegatedness. Isn't it? Just like you see, where there's, if I've just come back from Africa, and Africa has much more variegatedness than Europe. There's much more variegatedness. There's much more color aspect. There's much more varieties of different types of insects, beautiful colored birds. There's much more abundance of variegatedness. The fruits are much more full of life. You see, you can get every day pineapple, avocados, mangoes. You can get beautiful fruits, many different types of fruits that you don't see in the West. So because there is illumination, so much light there, therefore there is actual so much abundance. But then again, of course, if there's too much light, then that also becomes a disturbance. So therefore, the material world is perfectly balanced. That Prabhupada says that everyone is totally dependent upon the balance of nature. Just like I was given an example to Tosi Priyapur with that. If you get, just like your body, I have a little bit of dirt in a crack due to Madanga plant. And because of that little bit of dirt coming into the whole body reacts. You see? The balance is so fine that actually it cannot tolerate one little piece of foreign invasion. You see? So, therefore we can understand that in the creation, everything is so perfectly balanced. And if there's a little variation, if you go a little bit this way or that way, havoc, you see? Just like your body is perfectly. Therefore, the material creation is purnam. Om purnam at the purnamidam. Purna purnamudachate, purnasya purnamadaya, purnam eva vishishate. That all of the planets, they are perfectly related with the sun. And if there is one half a degree movement either way, then havoc is there. If there is some degree out, 1 degree out or whatever, then there will be too much heat. And if there's another degree out, there will be too much cold. So therefore, there is a perfect relationship. But what the scientists say is they say, well, only because the earth is the only planet in the universe which is related to the sun. Every other planet somehow or other missed out. And we were the only ones who managed to be lucky enough to be relative, properly related to the sun. And therefore there's life on this planet, and all the other planets, unfortunately, they just weren't in the right place at the right time. So they are vacant of life. But this is not a fact. Actually, if we believe that there is perfect relationship between the sun and the planet, then we must understand that there must be some control. In other words, how is it possible that everything on this planet is related to the sun? And the sun is 96 million miles away. So how can it be that the things on this planet knew that there was going to be a sun 96 million miles away? You understand my point? In other words, if you take the eyeball has to be perfectly related to the sun in order to perceive light. You understand? It's not just a self-manifested, you know, it's not as if the eyeball sort of said to itself, well, hang on, the sun, I need this much light to see. And therefore I'll create my eyeball in such a way that I'll be able to perfectly relate to the sun. So, therefore, if we see that each particular eyeball relates in a designated way to the sun, then that means that they've been created to relate that way, just like an owl's eye and a human's eye. Why is it the owl has got a bigger iris? You see? Is it that the eyeball of the owl suddenly decided that, well, I'm going to relate to the sun differently from the human? No. The point is that just like you can see, how is it that the vegetables, the fruits, a bigger example, how about the ocean? The ocean is full of salt. Now salt water cannot be drunk by any human being. If you drink salt water, you'll die. But at the same time, salt keeps the water, according to modern science, 90.8% pure. Seawater is 90.8% pure. You see? So how is it that the salt in the water is going to be removed so you can drink it? So that is done by the sun. The sun is the biggest distiller. You see, just like you have when you make whiskey, you need to distill the water. You see? It's called a distillery, isn't it? You have to distill the water. So therefore, they have to create a wonderful mechanism to distill the water. But here we see that the sun, the earth, which is carrying billions of tons of salt, I mean literally billions and billions. Now nobody knows where that salt came from. But we do know that the salt actually preserves the water. And therefore, the relationship between the water and the sun is perfect for evaporation. If there's too much sun, there wouldn't be any water because it would all evaporate. There'd be too much cloud. And therefore, if there was too much cloud, therefore the light would not be able to penetrate onto the planet. You see? So therefore, if there was no penetration of light onto the planet, then things would not grow properly. So we do not know other planets, but at least we can observe our own planet that the sun is perfectly related to the water to give exactly the right amount of evaporation so that the earth can be watered in a wonderful way. And if there's too little sun, then there will be freezing up of the water. And if there's freezing up of the water, there will be not enough evaporation. But at the same time, there is a distinct amount of ice that's needed to keep the oceans supplied. So therefore, if you study oceanography, you'll find that the liquidation of the ice is perfect in relationship to the planet. And that's why now, because of our pollution of the atmosphere, everyone is going mad, because just simply by one simple disturbance in society, by the creation of atmospheric pollution, we have actually caused what we call a greenhouse effect. Now, how much degree does it take to create a greenhouse effect? Isn't it? It only takes a small degree. So that shows you that one simple degree out and there's chaos. You see? So therefore, instead of them having the intelligence to understand how finely created this material world is, how wonderfully related it is to the sun, instead they look at it the opposite way and say, oh, it's completely accidental. It's completely accidental that there is this relationship. And that actually, at the same time, they spend their whole lifetime studying the perfect balance. Studying the perfect balance of nature. The whole oceanography, the whole science of oceanography is studying the perfect balance. So this Purnam is the balance. You see, this is the balance, that Purnama da Purnamidam, that the Supreme Lord has created everything in perfect balance. And therefore, if we study, we'll find that all the different species are, according to their ability to perceive light, they actually have ability to maneuver in darkness. You see? Now, without maneuverability, you cannot even get food. So therefore, we find that we are either limited or we become less limited by the removal of darkness. So that's why society, human society, are able to function 24 hours a day, because we have created light, artificial light. Therefore, our society goes on 24 hours a day. But most animal species stop at a certain time at night because they don't function in darkness. So therefore, we can understand by a little bit of intelligence that if we were able to remove darkness altogether, then there could be complete auspiciousness. Now, this can only be done by actually understanding that there is a plane, that there is another platform, transcendental plane, where there is no darkness. You see? And therefore, what we are doing in Krishna consciousness is we are trying to get out of the darkness. We want to get out of the darkness. So therefore, we have to approach higher authority. This is the point here, that the demigods, because there was too much influence of darkness, therefore they approached higher authority. They didn't, even though they're very powerful demigods, they did not try to make their own adjustment. They actually approached higher authority. And therefore, this is the point to be understood in this purport. But if we want to get out of darkness, instead of making our own futile adjustments, instead of trying to make some mental adjustment or some physical adjustment, because we should understand as intelligent human beings that this material world is all inauspicious. All inauspicious. And therefore, simply making adjustments in the darkness, it may remove for a temporary period of time, it may remove a certain degree of calamity. But in actuality, until we remove all the darkness, we are in a very precarious situation. Therefore, Krishna consciousness business is to get out of darkness altogether. And what is the means of getting out of that darkness is to become independent of our senses. We should become independent of our senses. And the way we become independent of our senses is by surrendering our senses to Rishikesha. Rishikesha Kesha Sevanam. If we want to get out of the inauspiciousness of sensual activity, therefore, just like the demigods, although they're enjoying, but because there is the inauspiciousness in this material world, so Prabhupada said even on the royal road, there is danger. So the demigods, they are able to enjoy so much power within this universe. But as soon as Aranyakashipu and Aranyaksha come along, they're in trouble. They're in trouble. So we also may be able to make so many adjustments, but as soon as Aranyakashipu and Aranyaksha come, and what is the nature of Aranyaksha and Aranyakashipu? What did they inflict within the universe? They inflicted death. They inflicted death. They were going around killing left, right, and center, and therefore they were able to kill even the demigods. So because of this inauspiciousness, therefore the darkness is a warning. The darkness of Diti's pregnancy blocked out the light, and all the planets were impaired. So the demigods became very disturbed. But because they had the intelligence to approach higher authority, therefore they were able to be instructed properly. So at the same time, we should see the inauspiciousness of this material world, and we should understand that it is an ocean of darkness, and therefore we offer our obeisances unto the spiritual master, because the spiritual master forces open the eyes of the disciple. You see? He forces open, not the materialized. Not the materialized, because the materialized are useless. What is the use of your material eyes? You will not be able to see even beyond. If something is too far, you can't see it. If something is too near, you can't see it. So what is the use? Not our material eyes, but he is opening up our spiritual eyes. And what is that spiritual eyes? That is the illumination of the heart. Tene Brahma Hridaya Adhikavaye. Hridaya means from within the heart. So Krishna says that for those who worship me, for those who are devoted to me and worship me with all the heart, I, from within the heart, give them the illumination, transcendental illumination, transcendental light. So therefore a devotee is not much interested in external light or external darkness, but he is very much interested in the illumination of the heart. So Krishna consciousness means that we should go after the illumination of the heart. And that is the meaning of chanting Chaitanya Dapana Marjanam. This Chaitanya Dapana Marjanam Mahadvagri Navapanam. That we should be wanting to clean the darkness of the heart with the torchlight of transcendental sound. So chanting of Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. If we are able to take shelter of sound, instead of taking shelter of our false ego, instead of taking shelter of our material designation, our material body, if we can just take shelter of transcendental sound, then we can actually experience the cleansing of the heart. Otherwise, we will always close our eyes in darkness. There is darkness inside and darkness outside, isn't it? If you close your eyes, there's darkness, and if you open your eyes, there's darkness. The only reason you don't have darkness is because of the sun. So therefore, when the sun is gone, just like at nighttime, if you're in a completely dark room, at nighttime, if you close your eyes, there's darkness, and if you look outside, there's darkness. So therefore, a devotee should be intelligent and know that all around there's darkness. Therefore, all around, everything is precarious. Everything is inauspicious. So therefore, we have no business in this darkness. Is there any questions at all?
I just wondered about, you know, the Brahma Muhurta hours, it's supposed to be a certain time. During the winter, it's like it's kind of full when it's dark.
It's supposed to be 9:30, sometimes it's all winter.
It's in the dark.
It's, yes, and that, the Brahma Muhurta is before the actual breaking of the dawn. But at the same time, it lasts. Do you know the time it lasts?
48 minutes.
Huh? One Muhurta is 48 minutes. But the Brahma Muhurta lasts for a certain period of time. I don't know the exact time. Brahma Muhurta? Brahma Muhurta is that period, the Muhurta. There are so many Muhurtas in a day. And the Brahma Muhurta is the most auspicious. It is just before dawn, just before the dawn comes. And that is the time when one should rise and one should meditate on the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So in the winter time, the Muhurta changes, and actually Mangalati should change. Originally when we were in Bari Place, we had our Mangalati earlier. Sometimes we have Mangalati at 4 o'clock. As I remember, 4:30. Between 4 and 4:30, we had our Mangalati. So I don't know now, they don't seem to do that. They don't seem to change the Mangalati time. But it used to change in those days. But I always just assumed it was because the Muhurta changed. So really, in the we don't go by the normal kami time. We go by the movement of the sun and the moon. So it's generally that if the sun rises later, earlier, then you have to get up earlier. See, it should be 1.5 hours before sunrise. So you should be up 1.5 hours before sunrise. So if the sun rises at 2 o'clock, you should be up at 12:30, technically speaking. But how much we have to adhere to that, because we are living in northern hemisphere, so we have the difficulty, because in Sweden they have what they call the midnight sun. So the sun is there at midnight. So I don't know how it works. But generally speaking, 1.5 hours before sunrise. Okay, Śrīla Bhāgavatam Mahāpurāṇam ki jāy. Śrīla Prabhupāda ki jāy.